Well, this morning I continue where I left off last time in Philippians and the third chapter. Philippians chapter 3. And I think last time I finished at verse 3 or 4 there. I'll just read the section again. Philippians chapter 3, verse 2. Watch out for those dogs, says Paul. Those men who do evil, those mutilators of the flesh. For it is we who are the circumcision, we who worship by the Spirit of God, who glory in Christ Jesus, and who put no confidence in the flesh. I think that's where I finished last time. I'm going to take up this morning with the word though in verse 4, though I myself, and so on. Now, I think I said this somewhere in the past when I was looking at these verses, that probably on the first reading, for most people, this is double Dutch. It doesn't mean a thing. It's not the kind of language that's going around the streets, is it? Well, we are the circumcision, we who worship, and all the rest of it. No. People don't talk like that, do they? No. And who are these dogs and these mutilators of the flesh? This can't be anything to do with us, can it? It has everything to do with us. Everything. You've got to understand, first of all, the history here, yes. But once we've got the history here, that's if you're in the lecture hall tomorrow, the chap will give you a talk on history. But I'm supposed to be in a pulpit. I'm supposed to be preaching. Which means I use the history. But I use it. Fred said, it's challenging. Yeah. That's what preachers are supposed to do. They're supposed to inform our minds. And then show us the relevance of these things. And make it realize it's all for me. Because it is all for you, my friend. You're in this chapter. You're in this book all the way through. Every man is. And Paul is saying something here which we all need to hear and desperately come to terms with. Be clear about. A little bit on the history. Let me just remind you. The early church, the early believers, were very quickly subjected to attacks. And the principal attack in the New Testament was from men who wanted to grab hold of the infant church, the infant believers, and drag it back into Judaism. Remember that Christ was born a Jew. Remember that the early disciples were all, without exception, Jews. Remember the work started, the first church, if we say, was in Jerusalem. The actual preaching of Christ did not start in Jerusalem. Strangely enough, wonderfully enough, if you read in Mark, he actually started in the outermost parts of Israel, and up in the north, in the people that sat in darkness, Galilee of the Gentiles. But it's quite clear that the early church is largely a Jewish company. But it's also very clear in the Acts of the Apostles, it wasn't long, through persecution, that the gospel was forced out of Jerusalem, according to the promise of Christ, that it would begin in Jerusalem, go into all Judea, and then into the uttermost parts of the earth. And when you get to the 10th of Acts, you will find that the Holy Spirit moves Peter to take the gospel to the Gentiles. Which, if you read Acts 10 for yourself, you will see was something which was mind-blowing to that man. He just could not come to terms, first of all, with the fact that the gospel might go out to Gentile people. We won't go into all the background now. He had a real quarrel with the authorities of the church at the time in Acts chapter 11, but they were quickly persuaded But it wasn't long. 13th, 14th, and 15th of Acts, you will find it, before teachers started trying to drag the gospel back to Judaism. Yes, they said, this Paul, yes. Yes, great preacher, yes, yes. What he says is right, of course, yes, that's very true. But unless you are circumcised, of course these Gentiles hadn't been. That was a Jewish rite, given by God, it's true, but it was a Jewish rite. It was the way a boy became a Jewish man. It was the way the whole thing worked. It was dependent upon this rite and ceremony. But the Gentiles, of course, were free of it. So, said these teachers, you must get them to be kosher. That wouldn't be their word, but it would be today. You must be kosher. And to be kosher, you need to come into this Jewish system. And Paul, that's where I opened this series, tackled this issue. It cost him dear, but you will find he tackled it in Galatia, first of all at Antioch, at Jerusalem itself, Rome, the Ephesians, Philippians. You'll find others doing it too in the Hebrews. All over the New Testament you find Paul principally, but other writers and other apostles also standing against this forcing, this taking the gospel back into Judaism. And verse 2 in our passage, it's obvious that the Philippians now, the Philippian church is a Greek church, Philippi, that these teachers have reached Philippi now. And Paul doesn't mince his words. He says in verse 2, these are dogs. These are evil workers. And this talk about mutilators of the flesh, of course, he is referring to this circumcision. Now, you may say, well, he's getting worked up about it. If you want to see him getting worked up about it, you read the letter to the Galatians and you'll see him getting worked up about it. He says this about them. I wish they'd go the whole hog, he said. I wish they'd emasculate themselves. I won't go into physical details here, but think about it. He's absolutely scathing about these men. Why? Because this man sees that it's not just a little issue about this ceremony or that ceremony. He knows what's happening here. And he's going to make his stand. What about? What for? What really is the gospel? What is it to be right with God? How are men at peace with God? And we need to be at peace with God. We haven't got all morning. We can't take all day taking explaining these things. But we are in desperate need, my friend. We're born in sin and we need to be saved from our sins. All of us. All of us. Even the Pope. Even the head of the Church of England, everybody needs it. We're all sinners. We're all born in Adam. And we need to be saved. I need to be right with God. Bildad asked in the book of Job, how can a man be right with God? It's the fundamental question. The gospel says, Christ. These men were saying, Christ and. And Paul stands against them. And in verse 3, he says, we are the circumcision. I did this last time, so I just say again what it was. We are the true people of God. This is what real Christianity is, he says. It's we who worship God by the Spirit. We're not talking about rites and ceremonies. We're talking about Christ. We put no confidence in the flesh. Now, I explained that word several times. That doesn't mean flesh today means often things which are horrible and crude. Adultery, drunkenness, drug taking, murder, all those things, child abuse, that's flesh. It is. But not in Bible terms. Flesh in Bible terms means living a life outside of Christ, without Christ. You can be religious, but in the flesh. You can be decent and honourable. Most of your friends, you know, very decent, honourable, 20 shillings in the pound people, all good people, yes. Flesh, though, unless it's Christ or flesh, you see, that's the thing. And Paul says, I put no confidence in anything outside of Christ. That's what he means by that. Now, that's where we reached last time. Now, this morning, I want to take you briefly through 4, 5, 6, and 7. But it'd be very brief. I may use some illustrations I've used before. Forgive me, I don't record things. I don't know where I've said it. But Paul this morning, as we're looking at him now, verses 4 to 7, is doing something which he doesn't often do. He says to the Corinthians in a parallel place, he says, I'm making a fool of myself because I'm speaking about myself. And I don't really want to do that, he said. Except, it's essential for me to tell you these things so that you really do understand. I'm making a fool of myself. It looks as though I'm bragging, but I'm not bragging really. All I'm trying to do is illustrate by my own experience what I'm talking about. And I say that again, I have said it before. An ounce of experience, my friend, is worth a ton of theory. If you know somebody who's a Christian and can talk to you about what being a Christian means and what Christ is, that's worth a ton of books about it. And Paul gives his experience here. Now, I may have used this illustration before, but forgive me. Really, it's a picture, as I can see it, the best illustrated, of the man who's going to take his jacket off and roll his sleeves up and get stuck in. You see, there's these teachers. Very nice, pleasant man. You usually are very nice, pleasant men. You see, those Jehovah's Witnesses come to the door. Very decent people, aren't they? Yes. And these Mormons. They're all lovely people. Nice short haircuts, everything. Smart suits, everything. Not shabby like me and everything. Yet they're all nice people. I'm sure they are. But Paul's going to have it out with them. He's going to have it out with them. He pictures himself, I think, here, in a wrestling match, or if you like, in a boxing match. I used to be, as a boy, interested in boxing, but a long time ago, just watching it, by the way, not getting in there, but watching it. And I used to be one of these cranks who used to sort of sit up and listen to radios crackling when Sugar Ray Robinson was fighting somebody in America. Some of you might remember what I'm talking about, but most of you won't. Henry Cooper died recently. Our Henry. Henry Cooper, a Londoner, had one trouble. If I've used this illustration, forgive me, but he had weak eyes above his eyes, and he would cut easily. And his opponents always knew this. And so they would go for Henry's eyes. And quite often they would get him on the eye, and it wouldn't be long before the referee would stop the fight because he was bleeding too much. But the opponents also knew with Henry that if they didn't catch him on the eye, he would catch them. And in his most famous fight, which he lost against Cassius Clay, he caught Cassius Clay, I think, in the second round with a left hook. And Cassius Clay just did not know where he was. But Henry caught him just too late. For the bell went, and his seconds dragged him back into his seat, Cassius Clay, and worked on him like the clappers. And I think they get 2 minutes, is it? I don't know, 3 minutes. And he's up again. Unfortunately, he could stand up, and he caught Henry on the eye. He had a split in his glove, and he caught Henry on his eye. And of course, in the third or fourth round, Henry was stopped. If he'd caught Cassius Clay about 5 seconds before, he would have been world champion. Why? Because everybody knew with Henry, he had a left hook. Cassius Clay said, Henry's hammer. That's what it was called, Henry's hammer. And if he caught you with his left hook, you didn't know what day of the week it was. And Paul here, I'm sorry for that illustration, but it's the best I can do. He's after these workers here. He's in a struggle. And he's not saying these things just for fun. He's giving them slugging punches. Let me illustrate it. Let me show you. Remember where they're coming from. These are teachers who want to take the church back to Judaism. Paul says, right then, let's have it out. They think they can boast, don't they, about their Jewish roots and their Jewish this and their Jewish that. If anyone thinks he has reasons to put confidence in the flesh, that's what he means. If anybody can boast about any of these things, let's hear what they've got to say. I'll give them my punch, then they can have a go back. Right, here's my punch, first punch. I was circumcised, he says, on the eighth day. No, that doesn't mean anything to us, my friend. Nothing at all. I mean, I assume you're not Jewish. I mean, I'm not Jewish. It doesn't mean anything to me. Only in theory. I know what he's talking about because I thought about it. But if nobody had explained it to me, it would just wash up like water off a duck's back. It wouldn't mean anything to me. Circumcised the eighth day. So what? Ah. Well, in this context, what does it mean? These men are saying to the Christians, your believing in Jesus is all very well, you know. But have you been circumcised? See? We have. Oh, says Paul, you have? So have I. Now, here's my punch. When were you circumcised? I was circumcised the eighth day. When were you? Now, most of these men were proselytes. That is, they were not born Jews. They had opted to become Jews. They were Greeks who had opted, had seen the Jewish religion and said, we prefer that to our Greek religion. Now, that's pretty wonderful. I commend it. That's good. Of course, becoming a Jew as a proselyte, the men had to undergo this rite of circumcision. Yes, excellent. Yes, right. So if a man was, say, converted to Judaism at 25, he was circumcised at 25. Very good. Yeah. But Paul was circumcised the eighth day. Now, I don't know if you know, but I'll explain it to you. In Jewish terms, that is what is kosher. That is the absolute right day. Everything else is all right, but it's not quite all right. You see, he said, I've got that. Have they got it? I've got that mark, you see. Let's go to another one, he says. Of the people of Israel. Well, what does that mean? Well, these are probably Greeks who have opted to become Jews. Very good. I did not for it, he said. I was born into it. It's in my blood. It's in my genes, you see. You see, I know some of you are Welsh. Well, it's in your genes. It's in your genes. I'm English. Nothing wrong with it at all. It's perfectly good. It's natural. It's fine. But in this context here, they're arguing, ah, you've got to become Jewish. Ah, sure you have, all right. I'm a Jew. A real Jew. A real true Jew. What are you? I'm only a proselyte. Oh, yeah. How about this then? Of the tribe of Benjamin. What tribe do you come from? Well, I don't come from any tribe, really. No, I do. I can go back to Benjamin. I can go back to Jacob. I can go back to Abraham. I've got his blood in me. Have you? Can you see what he's saying, my friend? He's slugging it out with them. You claim these things. You want these things. You won't get any... I mean, I know he's making a fool of himself. You won't find anybody who's got it more than me. A Hebrew. That's how he sums it up. Of the Hebrews. You couldn't get a more Hebrew man. About this law business. Well, I was a Pharisee. You see, there's a whole world in what he means by this. It says somewhere that that is the strictest sect of our religion. As for zeal, persecuting the church. You want to know my credentials? I gave my life up to persecute the church. I thought so much of the law. I thought so much of God that I hated this Christ and I hated his people and I did all I could to destroy it. You want to know my credentials, my Jewish credentials? Match those. Legalistic righteousness. Test me and see. Ask me what laws I didn't keep. Let me just give you one example. I don't know if you know this, but... Well, I'm sure you do, really. But, I mean, you know when they keep the Passover. that their bread must be without yeast. It must be plain, unyeasted bread. That's what it was in Exodus 12 when they came out of Egypt. And so, Jews today, when they eat the Passover, there must be no yeast in the bread. But there must be no yeast in the house. And the women of the house for the week before are absolutely, I can't find the word, painstaking that in the word. They scrub everything to get rid of every atom of yeast that they can find. So zealous are they. This is what Paul is saying here. Name it. Take any of the 650 commands. Not just the 10, 650 of them. Find them all. Sabbath keeping. Find it. I kept it. I did it. Feasts. I was always there. Vows. I did them all. Test me and see, he says. You see, he's slugging it out with these people. Because they're putting up this Jewish thing. And he says, what I'm going to say to you now is not because I'm inferior to these teachers in this regard. I have matched them in every way. If I can use a card game thing, he's trumping them on every card. They put down the ace of whatever it is, and he puts down the ace of trumps. You know the illustration. He outbids them everywhere. But now for the punchline. But whatever was to my profit, I now consider loss. Now, of course, that's, again, water off a duck's back. Now, this is where we're coming into the picture, my friend. We're getting pretty close to ourselves now. This is what he writes against all that. He writes against it one word, loss. In fact, next time I come, God willing, he'll write an even stronger word. In our version, it's rubbish. In the authorized version, it is done. Don't like talking about that. No. That's exactly the word he uses, though. That's exactly the point he's making, though. I don't talk about it, he says. Why not? Because it doesn't come into the picture at all. This is nothing to do with being right with God. You can be a Jew. You could be a Hebrew of the Hebrews. You could be circumcised the eighth day. You can have the law. You can try and keep the law. You can do all this, he says, but it's lost to you. Now, what does he mean by that? Did God not give the law? Did God not give circumcision? Did not God demand sacrifices? He did, he did, he did. Well, what do you mean, Paul, loss? What do you mean? Was it not a great advantage to be a Jew? Yes. What advantage then hath the Jew? Much in every way, he says. Many advantages. To them were committed the oracles of God. To them belong the covenants, the law, and all the... Oh, yes, it's wonderful, yeah. Ah. Unless. If a man lets them get in the way, they will turn out to be not a gain, but a loss. A hindrance. Whatever do you mean, Paul? Well, he says, if you misuse that law, if you approach it in the wrong way, if you approach the sacrifices and the commandments in the wrong way, instead of it being a blessing to you, it will be a curse to you. And that's what these Jewish teachers are doing. What do you mean? He says the law and the commandments and the sacrifices never, never, never did take away sin. That never made anybody right. Abraham, Jacob, Isaac, Moses, none of them David. Ask them and see, and they'll all tell you with one voice. Listen to David. Blessed is the man whose sins are covered. How did you get that, David? Listen to him talking. He doesn't talk about the law. He doesn't talk about his works. All of them. No. That it's not these laws, it's not these ceremonies. And if we, says Paul, if Jews begin to think of ceremonies and rites and laws, they will miss what it's all about. But let me try to preach this now. Because that's nothing to do with us, is it? My friend, this is the point. Paul is dealing with this issue. How can I'll translate it to myself. How can I, as a sinner, be right with God? I have had many things to see to in life. I've been married and children and job and there's many things that have been coming to my life. Many important things. But from the day I was born to this very day and to the day I die, there is one great thing that I must get sorted out. I know I get my car serviced at the end of the month. That's important, yes. Must see to the brakes, yeah, that's right, that's true. And I must make sure about my pensions. Yes, of course I must, that's right. Yeah. And I have my children's education to see to, yes. And we have to see to the house and the garden, yeah. And jobs have got to be seen to, and holidays, of course. But there was one thing, from the day my mother brought me into the world, there was the one thing I had to get sorted out. You see, I can leave this world. Well, I shall. I've got no choice about it. One day I shall leave this world. My children, well, yes. My job, yes. My career, my qualifications, my car, yes. It'll all stay in the garage or whatever it is, yeah. But that one thing, what do I need? I was born dead in sins. And if I go out of the world in that way, I shall be ever, forever, dead in sins. I shall be forever separated from God and from all the happiness that eternity contains. This is no joke. I might die with a failed degree. I might die with a car that needs a brake servicing. I might die with this and that and the other. But so long as I die right with God, all is right. I might die to be the Duchess, the Duke of Cambridge. I might die to be the Prime Minister. I might die like this and that. But if I'm not right with God, all is wrong. If you don't believe it, there's no point in going on. But I believe it. I believe the one great thing which is needful is to know that I am right with God. Now, this is no joke then. Now, here's the two ways. Here's the Jewish teacher. Well, we don't have them. Yes, we do. Oh, we have these Jewish teachers about, literally so. But we'd have them anyway in the spiritual sense. Do you know the vast majority of people are caught up with this Jewish system? Not literally Jewish, but the principles of it. Talk to them and see. You're right with God, madam. How are you right with God? You hear him talking. I do my best. Have you ever heard it? No. Well, I'm unique then. You've never heard anybody says, I do my best. Of course you have. You've said it. Spurgeon spoke to a man and he said he was 80. And the man said, Spurgeon spoke to him about, eternity coming and that. He said, I hope we shall meet in heaven. The man said, well, I don't think I've ever done anything that will take me anywhere else. Precisely. I don't think I've done anything that will take me anywhere else but heaven. I'm doing my best, you see. Have you never met anybody? Well, I have to introduce you to somebody. Have you never met anybody who thinks because they've been baptized, they're right with God? No. Have you got a prayer book at home? I don't use it myself. But if you've got one, if you haven't, I'll lend you one. Turn up and page so-and-so and you'll find it. It'll happen this afternoon down here if they're having a baptizing service. They'll sprinkle some water on the baby. Now is this child regenerate. An heir of heaven. Right with God. Do you get it? Because somebody has done this, Paul says that's rubbish. Paul says that's loss. That's a hindrance. Of course it is. Why is it a hindrance? Because how many people who would hear me preach this morning and say, well, that's very true for these people over here, these non-conformists, but we've been baptized, you know, so we're all right. It's a barrier to you, my friend. If anybody in their mind is saying, well, it can't be me because I was baptized 20 years ago, my mum and dad baptized, well, that's a hindrance to you, my friend. That sprinkling of water didn't do anything. I know the priest said it did, but he didn't. He's wrong. And I know very well in 50 years' time, when your turn comes, another priest will say to your relatives, don't worry, my dears, we're burying this one in the sure and certain hope of the resurrection to everlasting life. It's a blasphemous lie. Well, that's a choice. I stand with Paul. Loss. I believe it's Satan's masterstroke. It didn't just confine to the Jewish religion. How many in England have lived and died because they think, sprinkled as a baby, all is well. Well, if that isn't a masterstroke, if that isn't precisely what this man is preaching about and writing about, if anyone has reason to think he can boast, I the more, whatever it was to my profit, I consider now loss, rubbish. I've told you about that man in Scotland. I remind you of it. Paul mentions birth here, doesn't he? My father was a Jew. His father was a Jew. Do you remember when he meets the Roman general? And the general says, you a Jew then? It cost me a lot of money to become a Jew, said the general. I had to pay a big sum for mine. Ah, says Paul, but my father was a Jew. I was born one. It's in my blood, you see. I'm a Jew. And his father was a Jew. And we go back to Benjamin. I remind you of that man in Stornoway. Remember? Ian Don, his name was. A young man. He had a father. I don't know his name. I call him Ian Don's father. And Ian Don's father attended the 3 weeks I was there preaching. And I tried my hardest to reach him. But his son told me he was worried sick about his father. He said, whatever you say to my father, and he loves the most hellfire sermons you can preach. But his answer is always this, I'm all right, because my father was in the covenant. Now that doesn't mean much to us in England, but for the Scottish people, that meant my father was a member of the church. My father was baptized. My father had me baptized. His father had had him baptized, you see. So all is well, you see. Is it? I had 3 dear children. Some of you can say the same. My wife and I prayed for them before they came into the world. As soon as we knew, I think even before we knew, we were praying for them. What for? That God would save them. If I could have given anything to see them saved, I would have given it. We taught them. We prayed with them. We prayed over them. We wanted to see it. But there was nothing we could actually do. They weren't saved because I was saved. They weren't saved because my wife was saved. They weren't saved because we tried to save them. This is no academic matter, is it? This is life and death. With these 3 bairns in our hands, 3 little infants, what could we do? We want to see them saved. Sprinkle them, not on your life. We'll pray for them. We'll surround them with everything. But we knew. And I know it now, that when we were surrounding them with this love, when we were surrounding them with these prayers, when we were giving them Bibles and teaching them, we knew that if this didn't save them, if God didn't save them, these things would actually be a hindrance to them. Because they would think, I must be right, because Mum and Dad were right. I go to many chapels. And I just say, in nearly every one of them, there are people there who've been there for donkey's years. And they think they're right with God because they've been there for donkey's years. My friend, these pews have been in here longer than you. But not one of them saved yet. This pulpit's borne more sermons than any of us. But it didn't get saved. That microphone's recording it over there. But I don't see any CDs in heaven. God has to work in our hearts and bring us to a living place where we say, Christ, save me. You see, this is what he says here. Time's gone, but I must say this. It's all negative. Where's the positive? Where's the positive? All these things are heaped on one side of the scale. But what's on the other side of the scale? There's only one thing, and it's not a thing at all. It's Christ. Now, my friend, I failed. And I should have been 20 minutes on this, not 5 seconds. Christ, Christ, Christ. Now, I'll translate it to myself again. Can you see, my friend, that I hope I mean it. My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. Try me and see. And then try yourself and see. You know, when the great men die, they pile their coffin with their caps and their badges and their belts and their insignia and their prizes and all the rest of it, don't you? But you can't put anything on my coffin because there aren't any prizes. I hope what I've got is in the coffin with me. I hope what I've got is in the grave with me. I believe what I've got is in eternity with me. For what? Not what. Is Christ. I will never leave thee, nor forsake thee. Some of you may say, I don't understand this. No, my friend, you don't have to understand it. I don't understand it myself. I'm just telling you now, I want you to know that being right with God is Christ from beginning to end. It's what he did, what he is, what he says, and all the rest of it. Nothing else. Lay anything to my charge you like. Tell me about my sins, and there's plenty of them. I've told you before, if you knew me, you wouldn't let me get up here. Tell me about it. Tell me I'm a good prayer. You're rubbishy wrong. I'm not a good prayer. Tell me I'm sincere. Well, I hope I am, but I'm not so sincere as you think I am. Tell me that I know my Bible. Well, I do a bit, but not so much as you think I do. But I'll tell you this, my friend, it's Christ only. Not my tears, not my prayers, not my repentance, not my faith, not my anything. It's Christ. And if you lay anything to the charge of God's elect, I'll give you the answer that God gives. It is Christ. It is Christ. So tell me then when I'm dying, for I know Satan will. Tell me, he'll remind me of my sins, and he will, I'm sure he will. He'll come to me and say, you said this, you did the other. You said the other, you said that, you didn't do this, no. But what's my answer every time? It's Christ, it's Christ. My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. Until you can find a fault with him, my friend, my soul is happy and well. And even when I get to the day of judgment, my friend, if I'm not being irreverent, if God should say to me, why? Why should you come here? Why? My hand is out to that man there because of him. I trusted him. My trust was weak. I didn't trust my trust. I trusted him. Sometimes my faith was weak. Some of you can say sometimes your faith at all, did I hear it? Has actually gone. He is ever the same. He ever lives to make intercession. Can you see it, my friend? I'm sorry, I should have been more on Christ than I was. Everything but loss. Nothing in my hand I bring. Naked cling to thee for dress. My friend, you may say, I haven't a clue what you're talking about. No, my friend, but I tell you, you need to be right with God. And will you hear this? Cling to Christ. Say to God, for Christ's sake, save me. And I don't talk about your baptism, your praying, your reading. Don't talk about anything that's got I in it. Only talk about Christ. Whatever was to my profit, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. Well, you needn't call out, my friend, but I hope I hear it. So do I. So do I. So do I. Well, can we sing our last hymn then?